November is National Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month, and according to the Alzheimer's Association, an estimated 5.4 million Americans have Alzheimer's disease. In South Dakota, some 19,000 people aged 65 and older are living with Alzheimer's. 402 South Dakotans died of the disease in 2008. And with the aging of the baby boomer generation, the number of people with Alzheimer's disease is projected to increase by an additional 10 million people. The Alzheimer's Association works to eliminate Alzheimer's through the advancement of research and provide support and services to patients, families, and caregivers. Jane Ospus is the executive director of the Alzheimer's Association's South Dakota Ospus, or South Dakota's office. And Jane Ospus, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Hello, Carl. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Also joining us is Gary Drevich, health and well-being and caregiving editor at nextavenue.org. Next Avenue is a website developed in partnership with the PBS for Americans over 50. And Gary Drevich, welcome to the program.
Hi, Carl. Thanks for having me.
Well, to begin with, Jane Ospus, I think we should begin with a definition. What is Alzheimer's disease?
Well, Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia. It is a progressive disease that attacks the brain and causes problems with memory, thinking, and behavior. So it causes problems severe enough to interfere with daily life, and what we look for is changes in those things. All of us, as we get older, things do change a little bit, but if it's really bothering you every single day or your family members, then it's time to get it checked out.
So that there's more to the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease than just memory loss?
Absolutely. We have 10 different warning signs that we look for, but the most common one is that memory loss, where people start asking questions over and over again. It seems to be they repeat themselves a lot. But it's more than just memory. It has to do with executive function, which means putting things in order, working with numbers, planning, solving problems, sometimes doing some familiar tasks that you've done your whole life that you're not able to do anymore, confusion with time and place, and changes in visual images, in perception, and colors and contrast sometimes as well. So there are many different things, and we encourage people, if they notice a change, and we're looking for a change. If you can't remember your college roommate's name when you run into him on the street, and you always had problems with names, that's probably normal. But if you've never had a problem with names before, and all of a sudden people that you know very well and you see quite often and you can't come up with their name, that's a change that we worry about and should be investigated.
How early can Alzheimer's disease be detected?
You know, it really depends on the person. We have people in their 40s who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and people all the way up into their 80s and 90s, of course. Age is the number one risk factor. The older you get, the higher the chances are of getting Alzheimer's. But we are seeing it in younger and younger people all the time.
Do you know why that is?
We're not sure, and that's one thing they're studying. A lot of it is people are living longer, and people are getting diagnosed earlier, and they're noticing changes, and they're investigating them. But we don't know what causes Alzheimer's. We wish we did. You know, it's the sixth leading cause of death in the United States now, but it's the only cause of death among the top 10 that we don't have a way to prevent it, cure it, or even slow its progression. So we are way behind in the research department.
Gary Drevich, what should families do if they suspect a loved one is showing some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's that Jane Ospus was just talking about?
There are things to do. I mean, one of the interesting things is that it's been found that 70% of people who end up being family caregivers are actually the people who first recognize the symptoms of Alzheimer's. That comes from recent research. And, you know, Thanksgiving holiday is coming up this week. I mean, it's an interesting and it's an important time and a kind of a common time for people coming home to see their parents to be able to detect a lot of those changes that Jane, you know, really laid out very well there. It's also a time to, you know, to start to talk about having a family meeting and starting to really map out a long-term care plan, including residential, residential care, including, family caregiving, people moving home. I mean, there's a lot of things people do, and you know, if somebody detects or realizes that a loved one, especially a parent, is going to be living with Alzheimer's, it's really important for the people who are going to become that person's caregivers to plan ahead, both for the person they'll be caring for and really for themselves, to make sure they're protecting themselves financially and in terms of their health and lifestyle as well.
What are some of those, you just touched on this, the legal financial issues that families need to be aware of when they're dealing with a family member with Alzheimer's?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when people become family caregivers, I mean, this is something that we've covered a lot at nextavenue.org. We have a lot of caregivers who come to us looking for advice. I mean, there's a recent MetLife study that says that, an average woman who leaves the workforce or scales back her career to care for a parent forfeits, more than $320,000 in lifetime salary. And for a man, $300,000, simply because it's less common for a man to give up full-time work. But, the first thing that all of our caregiving experts, advise is really looking out for yourself, making sure, a lot of people, it's obviously it's a very traumatic time. A lot of people are very willing to, to give up what they're doing and nobly and honorably move back to take care of their families. But, the sacrifices they make in terms of their lifestyle really need to be protected, because, of course, if you're not able to maintain yourself financially or in terms of your health, and there's a lot of evidence that that people who become full-time caregivers really sacrifice a lot of their health and well-being, then you can't be the caregiver that your loved one needs, and that's really crucial.
Jane Auspice, in dealing with South Dakota patients, do you notice that there are any particular legal or financial issues that are unique to this state, or are they pretty much the same for Alzheimer's patients everywhere?
Well, in a lot of cases, it's just being prepared. And the studies show that the more caregivers understand what's ahead of them and understand what Alzheimer's is about, the better they do and the better the person with the disease does too. So the things that you want to get in place certainly are all those legal and financial things. Who is the power of attorney? Is there a medical power of attorney? So that person who actually is diagnosed with Alzheimer's has a chance to make some decisions about their own life while they still can. They can choose those people who they want to be in charge when they are no longer able. If they have an idea of where they would like to live, whether it's an assisted living or a nursing home, if that time comes, they have a right to and should have every opportunity to express that opinion. So those are the really good things about that, those legal and financial plans. If you have assets in your family, you want to plan how those will be distributed. If there are no assets, you'll want to be looking into Medicaid and applying for that, and that increases all kinds of questions about your options for care. So all of those things are intertwined, and the more people are involved in that process, the easier their life is, because they know what they need to do and they get working on it. And it is very empowering for the families and the people who are diagnosed as well.
Well, I imagine that for the person that's diagnosed with Alzheimer's, that's a very terrifying situation. Gary Drevich, are there certain ways to minimize that fear?
Well, there are things, one of the interesting things, it was mentioned earlier about when people can be diagnosed and early screening. I mean, a lot of the research that has been coming out recently, is in fact focused directly on that about we are not necessarily, making terrific advancements in terms of the treatment of Alzheimer's, but we are making advances in terms of early screening. And, there's a major study going on in Colombia right now of a family with a genetic likelihood for Alzheimer's, and recent just last week it was found that some of those people, the disease can be detected, or the signs of the plaque buildup in the brain can be detected 20 years before it was previously done, and some medical scans being used here in the United States are also kind of moving up the early detection. And so it's a really interesting ethical issue that people are facing about finding out early before symptoms, you know, maybe several years before symptoms, that they, you know, are, you know, at least likely to have Alzheimer's. Of course, the tests are not 100% determinative. But, you know, one of the, what some of the experts encourage is, you know, to really take that and get involved. And, you know, there's a lot of clinical trials available, and that information can be found through the National Institutes of Health online. And you know, there's a lot of clinical trials people can get involved in to, you know, to be active and take those roles. And you know, and of course, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't want to know that they have, but the people who do, you know, some really do want to get involved and do all that, you know, and do all the things they can. And you know, somebody told us they, you know, that they wanted to volunteer and not vegetate in the years before they face decline. And you know, the people who can take a positive outlook like that, and especially if they can get involved in the research and really feel like they've got, you know, they're taking an active role, you know, will generally do better.
Jane, do you find that to be the case?
That's absolutely true. The two things that are holding us back on Alzheimer's treatments and the future are lack of people involved in clinical trials. So we have, the Alzheimer's Association has started a free clinical trial matching service called Trial Match. And all you have to do is go to our website and call the phone number, and they will talk to you a little bit, and they will match you to a clinical trial that's closest to you, that fits your situation, and that's totally free. So, yes, we need more people involved in clinical trials. And then the other thing, of course, is having funding for research. We're way behind in funding for research, and we need to catch up with that. So the clinical trials and the research funding are critical. And people involved in those things feel empowered. They feel like there is something we can now do. And Gary was absolutely right about this trial in Colombia. It involved people who already have a genetic predisposition to the disease, and so they're studying them. And if we find that out, and if we find out people who have changes in their brain up to 20 years before symptoms come on, that opens a whole new avenue of trying medications that intervene before a person ever gets the symptoms of the disease, and hopefully stopping the disease in its process. So the research is very exciting. There's more coming all the time. The Alzheimer's Association has an international conference every year that brings together the world's researchers. And there are lots of exciting things happening in that world. But we are way behind, and we need to keep going.
What happens in the critical trials that you and Gary are both talking about?
It depends on the people and where they are. There are trials on procedures. There's trials on medications. There's trials on early detection processes. We learn something from every single clinical trial, even, you know, whether it's the process that works, whether it's a medication that works, or something else. Whatever happens, we learn something along the way from every single clinical trial. So they're all important, and they're all very different.
Gary Drevich, how do the challenges of caring for an Alzheimer's patient change as the disease progresses?
Well, you know, and again, and here at Next Avenue, we talk a lot to family caregivers and the folks who care for them. And, you know, one of the really important things to keep in mind is you know, as the disease progresses and as especially, I mean, one of the things that we were talking about with legal issues is, you know, what a lot of people are finding is that, you know, the medical advancements that help keep people alive longer are really making it more challenging to really establish end of life documents for situations that they may not have envisioned about how the procedures to keep people alive have advanced. But you know, one of the important things is you know, if you're caring for someone and you know that. And Jane pointed this out that residential care is potentially in the future. It's really important to be researching that ahead of time. I mean, the research is very strong that the vast majority of people who end up living in residential care will move in there after a hospital stay. So something happens and they go to a hospital and then they are not, you know, simply not able to move back home, and that's why it's really crucial to be researching long-term care facilities in your area, the nursing homes, and visit them put them through the touch, taste, and smell test, someplace that you're going to be comfortable with. And that's a process that cannot start too early, for a caregiver.
Does early diagnosis help at all in treating Alzheimer's?
I mean, as Jane said, I mean, that's the research that's going on now. I mean, some of the other research, in terms of some of these clinical trials is whether inhaled insulin might help at least, delay some of the symptoms. There's a school of thought that considers Alzheimer's to be, it's almost, called type 3 diabetes because of the effects of insulin. There's research like researchers are hopeful. I mean, so far, the trials have been small for that, but I think those are going to continue.
Before we run out of time here, Jane Auspice, what resources are available for people in South Dakota regarding Alzheimer's?
Yes, thank you for asking. We have 19,000 people with Alzheimer's in South Dakota, and that means about 35,000 caregivers. We have an office in Sioux Falls. We're a statewide agency, and we serve all 66 counties in South Dakota. Our main focus is the information and referral. We provide a lot of education materials. We send out free packets every single day. We have support groups throughout the whole state. We can provide care consultations on all kinds of services. But one of the best things that we have in South Dakota, access, because we're such a large geographical state and we have a small staff, is our 24/7 helpline. We've got an 800 number that people can call 24 hours a day, and that information I can give to you, or you can put it on your website. But that's only a phone call away, and they're master's level care consultants available to help people navigate whatever they need to go through. So that's a critical link in South Dakota, as well as our website, alz.org. It's an award-winning website on information on Alzheimer's and dementia. And on there, we've just released two new services. One is called Charity Navigator. And people can go in there and put in their specific situation, and it kind of walks you through what we should do in the next process as they go through this, whether it's getting a diagnosis, finding caregivers, finding support groups, finding long-term care if they need it, and planning for the future. It actually walks them through that depending on their own needs. And then the other thing we have is called ALZ Alls Connected, and that's for people who have Alzheimer's and their family members. Is a social networking site where people can talk to each other online about what they're going through. So those are two new great services that are free for anyone wanting them, and that's a wonderful service for people in South Dakota because of our wide variety of people, our locations. We can't have an office in every city, so we stay connected through the phone and the web, and, of course, we're here at our office, not here 24/7, but we have good connections here as well. So.
Okay, so that begins with alz.org. That's your website.
That's our website, and our 800 number is 1-800-272-3900. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And Gary Drevich, for more information at Next Avenue, just go to nextavenue.org.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Jane Auspice and Gary Drevich. Thanks for your time here on Dakota Midday.
Thank you so much, Carl.
Jane Auspice is the Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Association South Dakota office, and Gary Drevich is Health and Well-Being and Caregiving Editor at nextavenue.org. November is National Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.